Hello, I'm Andrew, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 8th of May, 2024.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacons. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have myself, Andrew, Angela, Ian, Christine, Helen, Pete, Simon, and of course, not forgetting, Roger. In this week's edition, we have the latest update from Helen. We have the quiz with Roger, a special edition of our sports section. We have the latest news for the Black Country. And to start, we have a feature all about one of our region's most recognisable, fascinating mammals, the badger.
Shoppers have spoken of their surprise after a badger was spotted window shopping in Wolverhampton's Wharf Run Centre. The badger, which was seen in the early hours, was recorded on video enjoying a bit of window shopping as it walked freely around Wolverhampton's Wharf Run Centre shopping complex. A video shared by Greg's manager Gemma Chu shows the hairy mammal happily trotting around the popular shopping centre in the early hours, checking out the items for sale in the store's windows. Gemma said, "It's literally the funniest thing I've seen. Just for the fact that you don't really expect to see a badger there normally. You'll find them in the woodlands, but not looking through the shops." He must have been doing a little pre-shopping. "I really don't know how he got up here. There are only really the escalators in that direction. We can only assume he came through the automatic doors." The brave badger wasn't fazed by the sudden popularity as it walked towards Gemma to say, "Hello." Gemma added, "It was great, really. It was really good to see one alive. Usually you see them dead at the side of a road, so seeing one in person that was alive and well was really nice. It's nice. It was a really lovely morning. It's really the last place that you expect to see one. It really did make for a lovely morning." Nigel Tolley, chair of Badger Trust West Midlands and Worcestershire, said, "There is quite a large badger population around the centre of Wolverhampton. What usually happens is that last year's cubs, who were born in February, get thrown out of the family set. The older males pretty much say, 'Right, on your bike,' which leaves them looking for a new home. It's not that surprising now, to be honest. They are becoming more urbanised as they get pushed out by the farmers." Mr. Tolley said the best thing to do when spotting a badger in an urban area is to leave it alone and let it move on to where it needs to go. Nigel continued, "A lot of people get worried about badgers, but the chances of getting tuberculosis from a badger is realistically almost zero. We have thousands of trusts over the country, and I have hardly ever heard of anyone catching TB. The best thing to do is to leave them alone and let them carry on their travels. They will only stick around a short while before shifting on." So, did you know that the earliest traces of badgers in Britain have been dated back to 750,000 years ago? Meaning, badgers once coexisted with wolves, brown bears, Arctic foxes, and wolverines, all of which once roamed Britain. When did you last see a badger? Courtesy of the Express and Star feature writer Mike Lockley, we now take an in-depth look at one of the UK's most recognised and popular mammals. Badgers, a wonder of nature or a disease-spreading danger to cattle?
It is a story deemed too insignificant to make the 10 o'clock news, yet for the West Midlands it is significant. For lovers of nature, it is considered a hammer blow. This month, our government dramatically shifted its stance on culling badgers to combat bovine TB, a disease that has blighted British cattle herds. Despite a 2021 pledge to phase out the slaughter and phase in the vaccination of badgers and cattle, the cull could continue, and continue with a vigour not known since the scheme was introduced 11 years ago. The introduction of target culling, or to use its scientific name, epidemiological culling, in hotspots will see the resident badger populations near wiped out. Until now, the figure was capped at 70%, and there's no end date. Culls will continue until the disease is considered under control, then replaced by vaccination programmes. Far from falling silent, in some areas the guns will ring out louder than ever. The cull, once considered yesterday's news, is very much today's news. It is bad, or, if you're a cattle farmer, good news for our region. A map included in the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs consultation document identifies the West Midlands, Staffordshire and Shropshire as high-risk bovine TB areas. The controversial cull has already taken a heavy toll on brocks, though figures since 2013 vary between pro and anti lobbies. The Badger Trust says 260,000 have been killed, half this country's population. Shropshire has been hit particularly hard, with 4,000 shot every year from 2020 to 2022.
Since the cull began, around 14,000 badgers have been wiped out in Staffordshire, calculates the Staffordshire Wildlife Trust. In all, there are around 70 death zones in the West Midlands. My area, a rural haven straddling the Shropshire and South Staffordshire border, has in the past been targeted. It is government-sanctioned wildlife eradication on a colossal scale, dubbed a catastrophe by Badger Trust Executive Director Peter Hambly. The badger cull is the most toxic wildlife management strategy in Britain's contemporary history, said Mr. Hambly. The first thing this year's new badger cubs will see when they come out of their set is a gun. Emotive words, but is such a radical step needed to save England's herds from the agonies of TB? More importantly, has it worked? It appears a definitive answer remains elusive, despite badger carcasses still being piled high. Those opposed to the cull say there is not a jot of scientific evidence to support it. It is, they stress, ineffective because bovine TB does what it says on the tin. It is primarily transmitted by cattle to other cattle. Badgers are merely bit part players responsible for less than 6% of infections. And they have accused Prime Minister Rishi Sunak of pampering farmers in a bid to secure votes. DEFRA provides statistics to support their stance, and those statistics are compelling. In its March 14 consultation document about the latest phase, the department states, "The government's strategy to eradicate bovine TB in cattle by 2038 has followed the science to turn the tide on this insidious disease. It is, DEFRA declares, a war being won."
The number of new bovine TB cases during a 12-month period from September 2022 was at a 20-year low. The first 52 zones to feel the cull's full force have seen a 56% reduction in the disease, but there is still work to be done, DEFRA stressed. In 2022 alone, 22,084 infected cattle had to be put down. This month, Environment Secretary Steve Barclay voiced his loud support for the continued killing. Bovine TB has taken a terrible toll on farmers, leading to the loss of highly prized animals and, in the worst cases, valued herds. There are no easy answers in the battle against TB, but badger culling has proved highly effective and needs to remain a key part of our approach. Culling is too easy an answer, critics maintain. It's not even an answer, and it comes with a hefty financial burden. In the first 10 years, the initiative cost £58.8 million. The disease itself costs the taxpayer around £100 million per annum. The government's U-turn on this countryside hot potato has stunned conservationists. The political landscape has evidently changed dramatically, and with a general election looming, some say the move has been made to secure rural votes. Back in 2021, then Environment Secretary George Eustace unveiled plans to stop issuing new cull licences, telling the House of Commons culling badgers indefinitely is not acceptable. 2026 was the proposed date for total closure on the killings. For whatever reason, eradicating badgers appears a little more acceptable than it did 3 years ago. DEFRA has softened its latest announcement by pledging, "The strategy builds on our investment in wider scale badger vaccination, which is now much more of a reality, with more farms involved in vaccination programs than ever before." It's done little to appease anti-cull campaigners. "Sunak wants all the badgers dead," said ecological consultant Tom Langton. It is a political fig for a British farming industry that refuses to address the underlying cause of bovine TB in cattle herds, said former Badger Trust CEO Dominic Dyer. Less than 1% of badgers killed have been tested for bovine TB, and of this small number, only around 5% showed a level of infection that could lead to the disease spreading to other badgers and possibly cattle. He added, "If the government is serious about reducing bovine TB in cattle in a way that benefits farmers, taxpayers and wildlife, it needs to stop playing the badger blame game and push the farming industry to take its disease control responsibilities more seriously."
Up next, we hear from Helen, who, as usual, has our latest Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from Beacon, back with your weekly update of everything that's been happening here at our charity. And I'll start this week by saying welcome to May. This month is busy with activities here at Beacon Centre. We've got an exciting lineup of sessions that you won't want to miss. You can take a walk on the wild side with our trip to Dudley Zoo, reel in some fun at our popular fishing sessions, strike up some excitement with a round of bowling, or feel the breeze with our tandem biking adventures. There's something for everyone, and we would love for you to join us. Don't miss out on the fun. Call us on 01902 880 111 to sign up and secure your spot in our May activities. Talking about signing up, have you signed up to the Beacon's 5K Family Fun Colour Run just yet? The event is just around the corner. So mark your calendars, Sunday, May the 12th at East Park in Wolverhampton. Get ready for the most vibrant and fun-filled run of your life with coloured powder flying as you dash through the course. Join us to have a blast and raise funds for your local sight loss charity. Every step you take helps to make a difference. Don't miss out. Grab your tickets now at www.beaconvision.org/colour-run. And let's colour Wolverhampton for a great cause. Next this week, are you looking for a vibrant community that supports your independence and well-being? Well, a recent survey says it all. 100% of respondents enjoy being a part of our lifestyle service here at the Beacon Centre. And our Lifestyle Centre is more than just a place. It's a community where you can connect, grow, and enjoy a range of activities tailored to support the lives of those with a visual impairment. Why not come and join us? A community that celebrates accessibility and enjoyment every single day. Whether you're looking to make new friends, learn new skills, or just have fun, the Beacon Centre is definitely the place to be. Contact us today to find out how you can become part of our Beacon community. call us on 01902 880 111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org. Now, last this week, do you fancy stepping into the world of TV? Well, don't miss out on the chance to win big while supporting two incredible causes. The Inner Wheel Club of Tettenhall is hosting a special raffle where you could win tickets to join TV star Jay Blades during filming for The Repair Shop. For just £1 a ticket, you could be stepping into the magical world of TV and make a difference for two fantastic charities, Beacon and Base 25. Get your tickets at our reception, Sedgley shop, or by giving us a call on 01902 880 111. That's it for this week. I'll be back again soon with another update.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Now, with information on how to limit the amount of light entering your eyes and further help on how to manage light sensitivity and glare, here's Pete with some more useful tips.
If you need help with sight loss, then filter glasses might help you. Filter glasses are a range of glasses specially for sight loss, designed to protect your eyes from harmful UV rays and reduce glare and bright light, and also improve contrast as well. They make things clearer to see and your eyes more comfortable. They can either be worn on their own, or you can wear them over your existing prescription glasses. Wearing a sun hat or a baseball cap or a sun visor can also help too. So if you'd like to try the range of Cocoon filter glasses and find the right lens and frame to make life a bit more comfortable for you, then call Beacon Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment. You can call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a sight loss advisor.
Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition. Take it away, Roger.
A quiz now on TV, films and sport. Starting with number one. My name's Roger Brooks. What was the name of the first Doctor Who actor? The name of the actor who first played Doctor Who. Question two. Who played the maid, Polly, in the hugely successful TV series Fawlty Towers? Who played Polly the maid? And what was her other connection with that series? Question three. In what year did the film Titanic win 11 Oscars? Was it 1985, 1975, 1998, or 1978? Question 4. Who were the colossal at the time and legendary ever since stars of the Western High Noon? Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling. Two leads in that, the male and the female. Question 5, still on films. Who played Lawrence of Arabia? Lawrence of Arabia. Question 6. Can you name Daniel Craig's first and last James Bond films? Craig's first and his last James Bond film. The last one being after he said he'd rather slit his throat than play James Bond again. Guess money talks. Question 7. Can you name the series in which Roger Moore starred with Tony Curtis as two avenging, happy-go-lucky, crime-busting people? Roger Moore and Tony Curtis. Question 8. A very famous actor was actually born with the name Marion Morrison. He, get it? He changed his name to what from Marion Morrison? Question 9. Sport. Which football team plays at Craven Cottage? That's our 9. Give it some thought.
TNS Soundings.
Now then, after recent comments about it being one of the most gloomy and dour train rides, we take a light-hearted look at a journey so many of us will be familiar with, the Brum to Wolves Line.
It was recently claimed somewhere down south that the Birmingham to Wolverhampton train line is the UK's most boring railway. Sorry, I repeat. Some posho reckons Brum to Wolves Line is the UK's most boring railway. Pure saffness. I can't be having that. In an attempt to defy these claims, our regional newspaper, The Express and Star, sent local reporter Adam Smith on the joyous journey to give a true reflection of the Brum to Wolvo slog that so many of us know so well. So, some bod has had the cheek to say the train line between Birmingham and Wolverhampton is the most boring in the country. Black horses are not boring. Restored Rosie at Coesley Railway Station. Well, I'm writing this sitting on a train between the two industrial powerhouses, and I'm watching a fantastic argument between two teenage girls and a creepy bloke. He's getting destroyed. Ah, hang on, it might be getting physical. Yep, he's being destroyed. How is that boring? I bet the dude who besmirched our fantastic choo-choo line sat in first class, Mr. Yawnville. And the fun isn't just the passengers. This dude didn't even notice the majesty of the black horses. Name me another train line with 12 huge iron black horses adorning either side of the track. Well, between New Street and Wolves is the longest sculpture in the world, unveiled in 1987 by artist Kevin Atherton. They make the line anything but boring. As a child, the game would be to spot them. Now, as an adult, the fun is to see which of the scabby osses have had legs sawn off by the tatters. The horse at Coesley Railway Station was literally saved after being buried alive in undergrowth after being hacked to pieces. Now she's called Rosie and is beautiful. Tell the volunteers who first saved her, then repaired her, and then battled rail companies to get her installed on the platform that their story is boring. And what other train lines can you actually travel through time when the line passes Dudley Port and Tipton, look out the window to the cut? Sea canal boats being worked on. When dusk falls, the place looks exactly as it did in the industrial heyday of the Black Country 200 years ago.
This latest knock of the Black Country is the 21st social media version of Queen Victoria demanding her coach's curtains be closed when the ungrateful cow could not cope looking at the reality of industrial engine, which paid for all them crap statues of her dead husband. What train passengers are looking at is the first ever place to be industrialised, then de-industrialised, and now an evolving post-industrial landscape. There are all types of buildings to stare at various points of decay. Another game to play is, I wonder when the last worker left that factory. Or you can snigger at some truly shoddy modern architecture. Look out the window at Sandwell and Dudley Railway Station. There is an epically nasty erection. It must have been a gleaming white tribute to the Art Deco style for about a day. Then the soot settled, and now it's a grey pap trap of an office. That's not boring. As the Rattler passes through Smethwick, for the last 5 years, regular passengers, those who are short-sighted or forget their glasses, saw a huge orange elephant being slowly built. Or those years it was not getting built because Carillion went bust. The Midland Metropolitan Hospital, which is still not open. It is not boring guessing when it will actually open. This year, for the comedians on the train. Next year, it is not boring watching your taxes being wasted before your eyes. But from the elevated view of the train track, the passenger can see the Black Country name is outdated, thanks to our green-fingered forefathers. It is a sea of green like our own canopy. It's only black at night, and then the sheer seething metropolis can be seen in a different light. And the line passes Winston Green Prison, so you can play the game, who did I grow up with, is in there. Then again, the fella who finds the line boring probably can't play that game because everyone he grew up with are the best university graduates around, instead of those hard-bitten University of Life types on a 23-hour lockup. And opposite the clink, visible from the train, is Benefit Street, James Turner Street. That's not on any other train line. Seeing how Birmingham is a never-ending building site is also seen from the train. You can wonder if some half-built developments will ever be finished. When you see places by roads, you see what people want you to see. The best part of the house, shop, church or whatever. But by train track, you see the back gardens, the abandoned trampolines, bikes, and whatever else was once important to someone which they cannot be bothered to take to the tip.
Pulling into Wolverhampton, there is a post-industrial vista worthy of the greatest game of I Spy. The graffiti alone in the abandoned former factory sites is worth the ticket price alone. The great Goldian temper sprayed themselves into modern art immortality. And I grant you this is niche, there is the bottled gas plant. Each time you pass it, in the 10 seconds you see the thousands of bottles, try and guess how many they are. The first time I can remember getting on the train from Birmingham New Street through Wolverhampton to North Wales, and talk about boring train lines, try the ones with just mountains and greenery, was Bank Holiday Friday 1986. I watched as a student with a backpack ran down the platform trying to catch the moving train. He slipped, and I watched his face as he disappeared somewhere by my passport to Holiday. The man next to me pulled the emergency cord, and the hapless student lay wedged between train and platform. There was sympathy and shock for the first 2 hours. After three, holiday makers were yelling at him for wrecking their first day of sun. A castle? Our castle's boring. Seeing Dudley Castle from the train really shows what a dominant landmark it must have been when the Earls of Dudley were ruling the roost. I've had late night, early morning and mid-afternoon chats on the train, hearing why someone needs to travel between Brum and Wharves, court appearances, final dates, first dates, last-minute dashes to hospital, job interviews and school plays. Between Wolverhampton and Birmingham are the stations Smethwick Rolfe Street, Smethwick Gorton Bridge, Sandwell and Dudley, Dudley Port, Tipton and Coseley, if you're on the slow train. None if you're on the fast one. The thing about public transport is it can't be boring because of the people who use it. Turn your earphones off and listen to other people's phone calls and conversations. I bet there is not another more interesting route with more funny one-liners than the line between Wolverhampton and Birmingham. Okay, we can do without the bloke cutting his toenails between Dudley Port and Smethwick Gorton Bridge. Damn. Looks like I've missed my connection due to the delay of service, thanks to the fight I've just enjoyed. Up now, we have a special edition of this week's sports feature.
Hello, it's Amanda here. People with sight loss can and do participate in a wide variety of leisure and sports activities. Some sporting activities may require adapted rules, special equipment, or a different setting. And I'd like to take you through examples of various different sports and how they are adapted. Archery. Techniques for teaching archery are based on descriptive instruction and contact demonstration. The equipment necessary is the same as for fully sighted archers, but there are a number of extra aids available if necessary. Those commonly used are a block and board for positioning the feet, and a vertical stand which grips an adjustable horizontal point of flexible material, for example, paintbrush bristles, for guiding the position of the hand of the forward aiming arm. Electronic aiming aids have also been developed, but are yet to be adopted extensively. Bowls. Bowls is one of the most popular games for people with sight loss in the UK, and many clubs have blind and partially sighted members. They play bowls with the assistance of a director. This is a sighted person who stands beyond the jack and vocally indicates where it is. Canoeing. There are aids to help blind and partially sighted people to maintain a sense of direction when canoeing, such as a bell or bleeper attached to a sighted person's canoe. In general, the most effective aid is a sighted canoeist in the immediate vicinity, giving vocal directions. Clay target shooting. Athletes use standard shooting equipment with an electronic audio aiming device fitted to the gun. This detects the aim of the gun relative to the target and provides the shooter, through headphones, different tones indicating where they're aiming. The center of the target is white, while the outward circles are increasingly darker gray. As the shooter approaches the white center of the target, more light is reflected into the sight and therefore a higher frequency sound is heard. A sighted assistant is also used to ensure safe shooting. Cricket. Blind cricket is played with a size 3 football containing ball bearings. The teams are composed of players from up to 5 different sight categories. Each sight category is subject to different rules and compensations in order to make the playing field as level as possible. Football 5-a-side, also known as blind football and blind futsal. This is an adaptation of football. Teams may also use one guide who is positioned off the field of play to assist in directing players. The ball is equipped with a noise-making device to allow players to locate it by sound. Matches consist of 2 20-minute halves with a 10-minute break at half-time. Goal ball. This is an exciting indoor 3-a-side team sport of attack and defence. It is played on an indoor court with tactile markings, so players can determine their location on the court and the direction they're facing. All players wear eye masks to block out light and thus equalize visual impairment among the athletes, with differing levels of functional vision. Each team has 3 players who alternately throw the ball along the floor with the aim of getting it across the opponent's goal line. The defending team tries to prevent this by diving across and behind the ball. A heavy audible ball is used that has bells inside of it, so the players can locate the ball's position using audible cues. For this reason, silence at events is vital. Golf. The same equipment is used and play based almost entirely on the same rules of golf for fully sighted golfers. The one notable exception is that a blind golfer is allowed to ground the club in a hazard without penalty. All blind golfers are assisted by a sighted guide who ensures the club head is correctly positioned behind the ball, provides a description of the hole and the distance to hit the shot. The golfer then plays the stroke. The handicapping system in golf allows blind golfers to play and compete with fully sighted golfers. Horse riding. Instruction for beginners may vary, but usually begins in an indoor arena with the instructor giving verbal directions. As riders become more proficient, they can begin riding outdoors. In the early stages, a long rein may be used, and this could be attached to a leading horse with the learner rider on the following horse. Some blind and partially sighted people have learned to ride with a high degree of independence and accomplishment. Mountaineering. Mountaineering and rock climbing are physically demanding, but there are some easy mountain routes in the UK. A number of blind and partially sighted people have taken part in rock climbing with the help of sighted instructors and leaders. Like table tennis, Polybat has been specifically designed for blind people. Polybat uses a rectangular table with raised edges and a wooden bridge stretching across the center from side to side, with enough room for the ball, small with plastic beads inside, to pass underneath. Bats are square pieces of wood with a handle extension, and the ball is struck from end to end, each player trying to defend their own sunken goal and score points by dropping their ball into the opponent's. Rowing. There are rowing clubs throughout the UK that have members with sight loss. In competition, individual blind and partially sighted people can race with a sighted team or in teams where the only sighted member is the cox. Rowing is one of the few sports in which people with sight loss can compete with sighted people on equal terms. Running. This includes track and field, marathons, and races. Some athletes might be able to run the course independently, while others will use the assistance of sighted guides. For example, the blind athlete has a guide who runs alongside, using a length of rope or cord to help with direction. The runners and guides communicate verbally so that the runner can receive information on the position of his or her rival competitors. Skiing. Skiing for blind and partially sighted people began in the cross-country, Nordic style only. However, training techniques and aids were developed for downhill, alpine skiing. For example, two guides position themselves either side of the skier with all three gripping a light metal bar. The trio of skiers move down the slope in a synchronized fashion, changing course by verbal direction. As pupils become more skillful, the pole is dispensed with and the skier relies on verbal instruction from one guide only. Such one-to-one instruction has meant that people with sight loss have become very proficient downhill skiers in a short time. Swimming. The sport is adapted by using a sighted guide where appropriate and by using a tapper. This is an experienced guide who is trained to observe the swimmer's stroke and tap the swimmer with a long pole, woggle, to indicate the lane ending and the need to make a turn. Other adaptations can include using anti-turbulent ropes instead of standard ropes. Water skiing. Experienced coaches using modern techniques have enabled people with sight loss to learn the basic skills of water skiing relatively quickly. Anyone wanting to take up the sport must be a competent swimmer, and a life jacket should be worn at all times. There is a special piece of equipment known as the Edge Triple Bar, which consists of three metal tubes attached end to end, making the bar wide enough for three people. The instructors stand either side of the pupil and help by lifting the pupil onto the skis. They then talk through what the pupil has to do until the skier feels confident to proceed on their own. Both instructors then release their bars at the appropriate time to let the student ski independently. I hope that this demonstrates that visual impairment or total sight loss should not be an impediment to participating in a wide range of sporting activities. If you are interested in taking up a sport or continuing with an activity, the RNIB See Differently Discovering Sports fact sheet, from which much of this information has been taken, provides a number of ideas and contact details of organisations who can help you.
TNF Soundings.
Now we have the quiz
answers
for this edition. Take it away, Roger.
Okay, the answers to our TV, film and sport quiz, starting with number one. The first Doctor Who was William Hartnell. Question two, who played Polly the Maid in Fawlty Towers? That was Connie Booth, who at the time was Mrs. John Cleese. Question three, Titanic won its 11 Oscars in 1998. Question 4. The male and female stars of High Noon were Gary Cooper and, before she was Princess, Grace Kelly. Question 5. Who played Lawrence in Lawrence of Arabia? That was Peter O'Toole. Question 6. Daniel Craig's first James Bond film was Casino Royale. And his last was No Time to Die. Sounds like a Cockney. It means he's in a hurry, doesn't it? I've got no time to die. It was called No Time to Die. Question 7. The series that Roger Moore and Tony Curtis played Playboy do-gooders was The Persuaders. The Persuaders. And the He-Man actor who changed his name from Marion Morrison was John Wayne, the Duke, John Wayne. And finally, question 9, on sport this one, who plays at Craven Cottage? And that is Fulham. Hope you did well.
TNS Soundings.
With many Morris dancers performing their traditional May Day routine over the past few days, we hear from quite possibly the UK's only visually impaired Morris dance side. Sticks and bells and hankies at the ready.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello and welcome to Great Malvern in Worcestershire on what you can probably hear is a very rainy afternoon. I'm Nick St George and I'm standing in the grounds of Malvern's fabulous Priory Church. This part of the world is forever associated with the music of Sir Edward Elgar, but in the building in front of me there's a group that's trying to make musical history of a different sort. They claim to be the UK's only visually impaired Morris dance side. Let's go and meet them.
There's a stick.
I'm Shirley Sheridan and I am the Squire. It is my responsibility to make everyone happy and I am responsible for our dance acts. We try and stick to the traditional dance as much as possible. But being visually impaired, we obviously have to adapt them somehow, and also we all have different abilities and it's really important that all dancers can do all the steps so that we are all included. It is difficult being visually impaired in the fact that we often lose our orientation. So we are tending to remain close together as a set rather than drifting apart. And also with the arm swings, the rotations, we also quickly become disorientated, although I'm sure it's difficult for sighted people as well, but even more so for us. And so therefore we may tame the dance down at those particular points. With the sticks, we are always holding the sticks on our right shoulder when we are not sticking, as obviously we don't want to poke anyone in the eye. Even though our eyes don't work very well, it's still not a good thing to do.
I'm Arnold Penny and I'm a retired or semi-retired dancer, but I was foreman for several years and I'm probably responsible for a lot of the dances that they do. The foreman is the one who organises all the dancing. Half the dances are traditional dances, and you'll know from the names that most of them are linked to villages around Hereford and Worcester and Shropshire. Places like Brimfield, Bromsborough Heath, Upton Snodsbury, they're all villages around the area which traditionally had Morris sides. So those are the dances that we do that were traditional. And we've tried to keep the sort of theme going by writing or putting together dances that are in places that we have been. And for instance, we've written one about Poolbrook, we've written one about Malvern Hills.
My name is Mitch Richard and I play the flute in our wonderful So Excited band.
Why so excited?
Why so excited indeed? When the group began to meet, first of all, in 2019, I wasn't actually a member at the very, very first instance, but when they began to meet, they used to meet down at Poolbrook Village Hall and always have a good chat about everything and put the world to rights. And during one of these chats, they came upon the idea of calling our wonderful group So Excited, which is explained in the fact that the X of So Excited is the X of the actual Morris sticks, and Cited is spelt as incited, S-I-G-H-T-E-D, and the name just stuck.
I'm Steph Stowe. I'm playing the band and I play tambourine.
And what would you say being a part of So Excited has done for you?
It's given me my life back. It's given me opportunity to be in something and belong.
And had you had any musical experience whatsoever?
No. I can't read music, but I play tambourine and I give it everything I've got.
My name is Anne, and I'm one of the sighted members of So Excited, and I have two roles. One of them is as bagman, which means that I work closely with our squire, Shirley, and she makes decisions and I do the background work to make things happen, like liaising with people for doing dance outs and just basically anything that needs doing, and our publicity. So that's one role, bagman, which is almost a full-time job, but not quite. As well as that, I am lead musician. As I sit here, I am cuddling what looks like a mini accordion. It's called a melodeon, and instead of having a keyboard on one side, it's got buttons. It's got buttons on both sides. It's an absolutely crazy instrument. It's not like any other instrument I've ever come across, although I believe it's related to a mouth organ, in that when you pull the bellows or when you push, you have a different note depending on which way the airflow is going.
My name is Jean and I am the drummer in the band, and I am also 81 years old, and you might be asking the question, what is an 81-year-old doing playing a very large drum in a Morris band? Having been diagnosed with macular degeneration some 3 years ago and suddenly losing my sight and having to give up a lot of my activities, especially playing the piano, because I cannot see the music, I was sitting one day at a tennis match. Who should be sitting beside me but our very persuasive band leader, Anne? So Excited, never heard of them. Needed a drummer, she said. And would I be interested? Well, not so much interested, as definitely you are the right person. The drum, of course, is a very important part of the band, as the dancers need to clearly hear the beat, and of course the musicians need to be kept in order too.
I'm Ray. I'm sort of hover on the fringe of this wonderful organisation. I'm not visually impaired myself, although I do actually run the local branch of Sight Concern, the old Worcestershire Association for the Blind. I run the local group, and some of the musicians and some of the band come along to our Wednesday groups. I help with the practical side, like looking after the sticks and the transport. It's my job to try and help make sure that everybody, the dancers, the band, and the dogs get to safely to wherever we're dancing and back again. It started, I suppose, when I think about it, my interest in visually impaired people started some 30, 40 years ago when we lived in Malvern, and a couple came up from Bristol for the weekend. They were more than visually impaired. They were completely blind. They came and said, we would like to, this was with my walking club hat on, we would like to have a couple of hours walking on the Malvern Hills. We're coming up on the train and we're coming up with our guide dog. So we said, okay, and we did that, and I was very impressed with their independence and the fact that they managed, even though they hadn't got any sight at all. And I suppose that was why, when I retired 25 years ago and we came back, I got involved with the Blind Association and subsequently with the Morris side as well. So, yes, I think they're okay. I'm very happy and very proud to be part of the gang, really.
I'm Jane, I'm now the new foreman, and I help support the dancers to learn the new dances. I'm also, or have been, in charge of helping people to gather materials to make their Morris kit. The kit is like our costume, if you like. On our head, we wear a black bowler hat. Around the bowler hat, we've got a nice bright coloured ribbon. And on that, we've sewn some little crocheted flowers and anything else that we fancy to make it individual. On mine, I've got a little rag doll and she's holding a little white stick. We wear a white T-shirt, which has got our So Excited logo on. On top of that, we have a black sleeveless shirt, which we have sewn on strips of fabric, any colour, any design, and also some fluorescent yellow green strips as well, which is to make us stand out. And I think I've got about 100 strips of this material on my jacket. Even with our sight loss, we've all managed to design and make these jackets ourselves with a bit of help. We do wear safety specs as well to keep our eyes safe. And the big sticks that we use are lengths of white plumbing piping, because traditionally they use wooden sticks, but they would be too heavy and not safe for us to use.
I'm Richard, and I play the double bass, and I also, for my sins, write some of the music. When I retired from teaching full time, my wife said, "I'm getting to be a grumpy old man and an old stick in the mud." So I thought, well, I better get out and do some more music, you see, it's what I can do. Oh, I found myself a double bass on the eBay, and learnt four notes, and start banging around on it. And here we are, still, years later. It's fun. It keeps me alive. And I have no serious visual impairment. But these people here, they don't let it get them down. They're so jolly, they're so upbeat all the time. And whenever we've finished rehearsing, I just want them to go on. I don't want to go away.
I'm Mary, and I'm one of the dancers.
And tell me a bit about the sort of places we're so excited to perform.
We've been invited to care homes. We've danced for Sight Concern AGM, the Upton Festival, Bus Fest, and we were invited to the Worcester Carnival recently, which was very nice, and that was something different. So a lot of different organisations are beginning to hear of us more and invite us.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are so excited! And we are the only visually impaired Morris side in the country!
We do not charge for our performances, but we do ask for donations, and they go towards our Name a Puppy Fund. And this all started when Anne Dix and myself decided to name a puppy Taylor after my first guide dog. And when So Excited got started, organisations would offer us donations. So rather keep it for ourselves, it seemed to naturally go into our Name a Puppy Fund. And since then, we have named another puppy page in memory of a member of the band. And we are now on our third Name a Puppy. So it's absolutely fantastic that a group of visually impaired people go out and about in the community, having fun and keeping fit, engaging with the public and raising money for good causes.
DNF Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!